Right, here we go. Claire, thanks very much for coming up and doing this. I really appreciate it. Driving all the way up for Ayrshire, so cheers for that.
Thank you.
You've heard a bit of a renaissance, it looks like, obviously, for A United. You talked to us a wee bit about your form up front recently and what's been going on.
So we've had a decent season. Like, obviously, personally, I have. I'm sitting high in the top goal scorers list. But as a whole, the team have done brilliant. We're sitting second position in the league, which is playoffs with four games to go. So my contributions and goals is brilliant, but we've had hundreds of goal scorers through the team. Obviously, no hundreds, there's only 20 players in the team, but you know what I mean. But actually, my proudest part of that is my goal assists. We don't have a tally for that, but I know I come off every game thinking, right, I get a few assists there, or one or two assists, and that's my biggest achievement. I prefer that.
And was that the same last year? Because I know you were Player of the Year. I don't know if was that voted or was that decided by like writers or like people involved in the league? Like, how does that work?
So I got it twice in the same year. The first one was voted for by your league and the players in your league. There's like a poll gazette or whatever it is they vote on. And then later on in the year, it went to public. And I think it was like narrowed down to the last four. So the public voted on who they felt would have got it, and that can't be true actually, because then it went to a panel with the last four. So I think it must have went out to the public, they've voted in players, then it's went to the judging panel and they've voted on these four players, and that's where I got it again for the league.
Oh, nice.
That was the big one at Hampden, that was a good one.
And is there a secret for this sort of success that you hear about some players? I'm not going to ask your age, right, to offend you, but obviously you're getting towards probably the end of your career, like the tail end. So have you had to like adapt your game, or some of them take up yoga and mindfulness and all this sort of stuff?
No, I don't know why. I just feel like I get fitter every year. I don't know what it is. I had this conversation recently. After I had my two daughters, I could have went downhill, and I know players have. But for me, I sprung back and I was fitter than I had been previously. Don't know if it's a mindset or I've just told myself, oh, right, I've had children now, I need to knuckled in, but it has just came naturally that I've just became fitter and I can last 90 minutes. For example, there we played Friday night and I played 60 minutes, played on Sunday and I played 90, and I feel fine.
And eat like no nutrition changes or anything like?
Again, probably I'm mindful that I need to eat good, so I've got a really strict regime with what I eat, and it starts on a Friday night when I've got a game on a Sunday. And then my only cheat night, I give myself either a Sunday night, but usually my mum makes me Sunday dinner, so I don't have any cheeky then. But on a Monday, I'll give myself a cheat night, because I feel like that's a night you can, like, you'll get time to recover before training the next night.
And is that something that's changed then? So, like, nutrition-wise, when you were, like, first starting out, would you have just been eating anything? Because, you know, the diet in Salt Coats was a fryer chippy and things like that, so...
When I was at school, I went out the fryer for my chippy, I know. No, I've always been taught nutrition. No, for a very young age. For when I joined the national setup, they talked to you about nutrition, and when I went away with the national squad for 14, I think I was first when I was 13, they actually monitored what you ate. So I was kind of, it was ingrained to you then. In the morning, if you had a game or training, you weren't allowed bacon, you weren't allowed sausages, you had to have beans and eggs, obviously, your protein. And if you put anything dodgy in your plate, they would take it back off you. But they did that for like lunch dinners, and you had to have a water bottle. If you didn't have your water bottle, and you'd get a fine, things like that. They'll just, for a young age, they'll just try to ingrain it into you that this is the things that you should be doing. So I've always known it. Whether I've always followed it is a different story, because my metabolism's good, so I just think I've always thought, well, I can eat that, I'll get away with it. But then as I've got older, I've appreciated the value in actually eating properly, because it's not just your football, it's your well-being and your mindset and things like that. Nutrition's really important for loads of things, not just football.
Who was the plate watcher then? I wonder how you get that job.
I know.
Running up and taking a sausage off of somebody's plate.
It was one of the coaches. I'll no name her actually, that's a shame. Because all the players loved her. I think she was nominated probably because she was liked. And if it was any of the other coaches, we'd be like, arsehole. But nah, they were just quite strict. And then even the coaches who were kind of the superior coaches, they would comment as well. Like, get away with the sausages.
Fuck.
I know.
And were you always a striker? Like, or have you changed, like, over the years?
I was a striker in my younger days. And then when I first signed for Kelly senior team, I was only 16, and it was Malky, I forget his second name, Malky Boyle. He was the manager at the time, and he put me left wing. My first game for Kelly seniors was at Ardeer, which was amazing. And he put me in the left wing, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? I had no clue what I was doing. I had no training, no chat or anything like that. And he basically just said, run up and down the line. So for the next, say, 7 or 8 years, I was left winger. Then I was put back into centre mid, which I hated at first because I couldn't get used to it. And then for the next, in fact, until only 2.5 years ago, I was centre mid. And then I was put back striker. So the new manager, he came to watch us in a game against Morton before he got appointed, when he was thinking about taking the job. And I was playing centre mid, and he basically said to me, I had no idea what your position was. You're just running. And he's like, I think you need to be moved into striker. So I've been put there ever since.
And do you think that's helped you? Like, when you obviously you're used to maybe playing deeper, and like you're saying earlier, like talking about maybe assisting. So has that maybe helped with your movement and knowing where to be in terms of like putting the ball in the back of the net?
No, I was still a goal scorer for centre mid. I played the number 10 role. And I remember when I was moved into striker, the Morton manager actually texted me and he said, I couldn't understand you playing striker the day, you're the best midfielder in the league. But like, I kind of take that as a criticism because I trust my manager's decision. So when he's put me up front, I thought, well, he's seen something. And then I've ran with that. And for 2 seasons in a row, I've been high in the top goal scorers list. So he's obviously seen something.
Aye, of course. Cool. I think because you've like obviously played for a few different teams, Claire, I think it maybe makes sense to go back to the start for you. So can we talk about like your sort of earliest memories of FITBA and then just kind of take it from there? Like, was it love at first sort of play for you? Like, how did it sort of develop?
My very earliest memories, at my granny's back door with my wee cousin. That's where I started. So it was my wee cousin. There's only 9 months between us. He's a boy. He always had a boy at his feet, and I loved him and I loved hanging about him, and that was just what we did. So it was all basic stuff. I never had a team, and he was in a team because he's a boy and they had teams for him. So for probably about 5 or 6, we were always kicking a ball together. Wasn't until I was in primary 6 I got into the school team. I was the only girl in the school team. And then primary 7,
Who did you go to, High Oaks or
St Peter's? Aye, St Peter's. So in primary 7 it was John Carlin was the coach. Don't know if you'd know John. And I've never had this conversation with him, actually, to ever say that you kick-started my career.
Well, you might listen. You never know. This is your chance.
I know. Well, thank you, John, because he came in one day. I was the only girl that was ever getting picked for the A team. There was an A team and a B team. And he came in with a wee tear-off of a like, newspaper article, and it said there was a girls' team in Prestwick, and they were looking for players. And he's like, you need to try this, because there was no teams running about us, none. So I took it home with my mum, and she phoned the number. They invited me down, and I ended up signing with Prestwick Caledonia Girls. That was my first team when I was 11. So it was really mental when you look at it now. Like, my daughter has 4 options in her local area. I day take her further, she plays with Ayr. But it's mental to look at the divide and the difference in only a short space of time. I'm not getting away my age, but it's not that long since I was kicking about, and then all of a sudden this growth in the women's game has been amazing. And the girls I know, they wouldn't appreciate that that's a struggle for my age and people like me growing up. But then I was at Prestwick Caledonia for, I want to say, 2 or 3 years, and then I was scouted to Kelly, and I basically went through Kelly's whole academy. Used to play, like, I'd play the 14s on a Saturday and I'd play with the 16s on a Sunday, and that was just the theme all the way through. And then I get called up to the women's first team, and I was really young. In hindsight, I was really young because not all my teammates came with me, and that was a hard transition because it was different standards and different attitudes and people, and I had a bully in the team who treated me so bad, so much so that I remember my Scotland manager came to watch a game, and he actually screamed at her after the game. He went through her. He said to her, don't you ever speak to my players like that again, because she was just being an arsehole to me the whole time. But that's learning curves. As an adult now, I can understand what she was doing, and she probably had my best interests in her mind, I think. Just didn't approach it very well.
Aye, just the way she framed it, and it wasn't like a jealousy thing or anything like that?
Well, probably a bit of that. She was a much older player, senior player. She'd played for Scotland, and I was new to it. I was in the Scotland setup. She was due retiring, and I was a new, fresh blood in the team. But I played left wing, and she was my left back. So my naivety and my game probably frustrated her, because she's used to having somebody experienced in front of her, and there's me. Wee me try to learn the left wing. So I probably annoyed her, but I was always trying my best, so she could have approached it better, but she never.
You mentioned the Scotland setup a couple of times there. Aye. So was that always a dream for you to sort of represent your country, and what was that like when you started to get called up and go away and travel and all that sort of stuff with Scotland?
No, do you know what, I'll be really honest with this, it wasn't my dream. And it wasn't my dream because I didn't think it would happen for me. Just didn't think. I had very low confidence when I was young. Always seen the worst of myself and always thought I wasn't good enough for anything like that. Anytime I did get played for a team, I would be like, wow, that's amazing. I'm getting picked. This is brilliant. And then when I get... So with the setup when I was younger, you were called up if you were good enough to go to a regional training, which was on a Monday night at Gas Cube in Maryhill. So I was taken there every Monday. And then for there, they shorten the squad and they pick an 18 if there's a tournament coming up. So the first time I got a phone call, I could not believe it. And I was questioning, I'm going, so who's not making it then? Why have they picked me? Who couldn't they go? So I went to, they take you to a training camp, which was in Perth. And you stayed in the Ramada Jarvis and your training facility was at McDermott. So the first time I did that, it was a wee bit surreal. And it was just like on you and you're getting to know all your players. And I didn't know at that point that this meant that this is a squad. So that's you, you're in the squad. Obviously, you had to impress. If you were really terrible, they would have probably got a date at that point. But for there, I got a letter saying that here's your itinerary. We're going to England to play against England and Wales. And I was like, what? And I was at like 14. And I couldn't believe it. I honestly couldn't believe it. And I had still so much doubt. And I'm thinking, why are they picking me? I don't get this. So there was that. And that stayed with me for years. So I don't think, when I look back in the times, I don't think I truly appreciated where I was at. I don't think I kind of sunk in that I'm getting this opportunity that realistically only 18 players, 18 people my age group are getting. So when I look back, I think, God, that's amazing. I'm proud of myself. And I can't wait to show my daughters certain things when I find it. And I go, oh my God, look at mum. They don't care, by the way. Just to stick that in, they do not care. But I don't think I realised the gravity yet. So I remember as well, so when you go up the age groups, you're not guaranteed to get into the next age group because they'll get fresh players for different regions and things. And I specifically remember I was driving to somewhere with my dad and we were driving through Falkirk. And I got a phone call for the manager, and it was Tony Gervais. Don't know if you'd know him either. And he phoned me personally on my mobile, and it was to transition from 17s into under-19s. And he was saying, right, training camp is blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what, me? And he's like that, why are you like this? Why do you know? He's like, this is why I'm phoning you. And he's like, of course you're coming to the team. And I was like, I don't know, Tony. I don't know why I'm like this. So I think that's probably... If people are listening to this will be the first they're hearing me talking about that, because I never ever mentioned that that was what I was like. But he knew, he could see that I had no self-belief and couldn't believe that I was getting in. But then with the under-19s, that was probably my most successful time with him, because we beat Russia 2-1, and that was the first time we'd ever beat Russia, and I scored a free kick, and we went to a tournament in Slovenia and we won that tournament, and we were just doing well across all nations, and it was just brilliant. You got to, we went to countries that you just wouldn't visit, Slovenia, Slovakia, Hungary, Finland, Sweden, all they kind of countries that, well, you would visit because they're nice, right, but you wouldn't necessarily go on a holiday there.
You wouldn't get a free holiday, is what you're saying?
Pretty much, you did get a free holiday and you got to go and explore. And to be fair to the Scotland setup, they took days out to make sure that you got, time. I remember going to the cinema in Slovenia and it was the weirdest thing. Why are we in a cinema? We're here. I don't get it. But that was their way of making sure that you got to explore and you weren't just in a bus and in a hotel, because it was very strict and regimented. But they looked after you. They really did. And also you get paid expenses. So at that time, I'm kind of like, I'm getting paid to play. Wasn't it really? It should have been my mum's money, but she let me keep it and put it in the bank. So, aye.
And what about when you were on the away trips? Like, did you go out? Was there like nights out and stuff? Like, any memories of those sort of times?
No, you definitely no. We wouldn't have allowed the night out. They patrolled the halls. It was very, very strict. But you're a young, like, person. So when I was 14, right up to just before I turned 19, I was in that setup, and you just knew, like, they didn't take shit. I'm assuming it'll be the same, but they just didn't let you away with things. And also, attitude was a big part of it, and that's something I still bang on about, standards and attitude. Like, I'll get on to that at some point, but when I went to air, I couldn't believe how bad the standards and attitude was. And I think it's just because it was so ingrained into you. You must respect your coaches, you must follow what they say, and if you don't, you'll be penalised. And I remember there was a girl, she was brilliant, I'll no name her, she's a brilliant player, and her dad had complained, I don't know if he sent a letter or an email or something, and he complained, but he was really, really cheeky in his complaint. And we get called in at McDermott, and we're sitting in the changing room, and we were aware that this player was absent for the changing room, and he went on this rant, if any of your parents feel that they can contact us and blah, blah, blah. And he went off in a rant, and she never played for Scotland again, ever. And that's just the kind of standard they expected, that your parents should be entrusting them to look after you and make the best decisions for you. And if people question that, then they'll no be back, so...
They don't fuck about then, no, it sounds like.
No, they do not.
What about, like, with, you mentioned the confidence, and I appreciate you open up about that. Aye. So, were they trying to help you with that? Like, was there any sports psychologists sort of involved with football back then, or was it just merely the coaches themselves sort of realising, look, there's a player here, but, you know, we maybe need to try and, like, sort of nurture that confidence to give you the best chance of succeeding?
I don't think there was sports scientists or psychologists. There was a club doctor, remember? One time in Slovenia, we were in this wee, like, shack, I can't explain it. It was a hotel, but it wasn't, it was their version of a hotel. And he came into my room, and he was like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know, I'm just missing home. And he's like, no, what's wrong with you? You're not performing in training, we can see something's up with you. And I just burst into tears. And he was like, what is it? And I was like, I don't know, why am I here? Like, why am I here? But they nurtured me. They never, ever made me feel bad about myself. They never said, well, that's a bad attitude, you can't be here. It was just trying to make me see that I deserved my place, and I was a good teammate and a good character to be there. And I think, again, it took me till I was an adult, an actual adult, to understand and appreciate that. But I appreciated it at the time, because it did give me that wee bit of, well, they see something in me, they believe in me, I need to perform for them. So Tony Gervais, he's a massive, massive part of my career, massive. Even to this day, I credit him. Like, he's just done so much for me, mentally, physically, his intellect, teaching me. Like, he's taught me so, so much.
And what about, you mentioned obviously standards and things like that, so you were coming for the Kilmarnock set-up, there would have been players obviously for all of Scotland involved with the national team. When you went in there, was there any part of you that was like, I'm just as good as them and I can play with whoever I want? Like, was there any points of like that in training or the games? Especially when you're banging free kicks in against Russia, you must be thinking, I'm fucking no bad here.
Well, to put it in the context, in my team was Jen Beattie, who plays for Arsenal, Jane Ross, who plays for Rangers, Kim Little, plays for Arsenal. I had loads, I would be here all day actually, but my team was a really, really good team. Kim Little was, I think she was 2 years younger, so see, when she came in, oh, she was unbelievable. We couldn't believe this wee lassie was as good as she was. But at the same time, there was players there who, in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know why you're here. Like, I can't, even to this day, I think, how did they manage it? But I was putting myself in that bracket. Like, I was putting myself with them. Although I was getting games and I was getting started and I was highly thought of, I was questioning why they were there. And I've only got two in my mind when I think of that. But they didn't last long, whereas I did go through it. So, don't know. I think, to answer your question, I kind of... But I still always had that wee doubt in my mind, and I always thought it was just going to stop at any moment. Like, you had to get a letter every single time you were called up. So, yeah, it's the same, you'll see it on Twitter. They'll announce a squad, and, like, mums and dads will share it and say, oh, I'm so proud of my boys, made it into the team, I'm so proud of my girl. And it was the same. Back in the pigeon days, I got a letter. So every time I got a letter, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm still in it. And you ain't in the same school as me, but St Andrews used to make a big spectacle at Mr McCulloch in particular. He'd done the Herald Mind. He used to always put it out there and he was my number one fan. Oh, Clare plays for Scotland. But I didn't see it like that. I was embarrassed. I was always like, oh God, here we go again. So I didn't like the attention of it.
And what about... So obviously, did you go for Kilmarnock? Where did you go for Kilmarnock? Like, how did that move come about? What was the sort of journey there?
I actually quit football. So when I was about 20, I came out of the national squad, and that's your big leap into the A squad. Still, it's a massive regret to this day. But again, it's all down to my mentality at the time and probably being a bit naive and stupid, but I chose a career. I got a job at the time that I thought, right, that's it, and I need to dedicate all my time, and it was shift work, and it was in the fire brigade, so in my mind I was like, right, this is what I need to do for the rest of my life. I've always wanted to be in the fire brigade, so that's it. And then obviously I'm missing football, so I went back to Killy, and it was a new manager, but she was brilliant, welcomed me with open arms, but I just wasn't committed. I wasn't there. I would show up, I would train, I would expect to play, or I would no train and expect to play, but she was quite strict in a good way. Kate Cooper, she's still the manager at St Mirren. She was good but fair to other players as well, so I needed to change my mindset and I just wasn't ready for it. So I suppose for the next couple of years I dipped in and out. And then probably the big move was when I went to Rangers, and that was just I was in a different place in my life with my career and things like that. And the training for Rangers was 4 nights a week. And that was a big jump for two, because then you're committing 5 days to your football. And it was in a much further place. I had to train up at By Bears then, at Murray Park.
I'm Ogai.
So, but Lisa Swanson for the Three Tins, she was playing with the team at the time, so we travelled together. So it was actually brilliant. Loads of good memories. Me and Lisa, she's funny, but she's stupid, so she always gave me entertainment. And obviously she's the biggest Rangers fan ever, and I'm no, so we had a lot of banter about that. So that was I loved playing for Rangers. I did. I loved the experience. I loved being in Murray Park, where you're getting treated like an actual player, and you had a proper training facility. You were getting kit handed to you if you needed it, and it was there, and you were really treated well like a player. Whereas Killy, as much as they did look after the women's team, and I always have, wasn't quite at that level yet. So I just felt a wee bit of professionalism, and it gave me another love for the game. And I did. I was like, right, this is it. I need to stop dipping in and out. This is where I need to be. So eventually, I think I was with Rangers 2 years, 2 seasons, maybe 3.
How did you, before you move sorry. On, sorry, how did you get scouted for Rangers? What was the happened there?
I don't actually remember the details of that. I remember Lisa contacting me and saying, like, you need to come, they're wanting to have a look at you. So I went up to a couple of training sessions, and it was inside Murray Park, and I probably just put on a performance of a lifetime, because I actually loved it. It's a big indoor facility up there, and we played training games, and I just totally just gave it my all. And it was Scott Allison at the time. I think he's involved at Partick Thistle now. He's a great manager, great coach, and it just was getting the best out of me, just the way he spoke to his players, and he held you all accountable, and I just loved it. So I think for that, I went out my way to impress him, and I did, and he got me straight in the team.
And there wasn't, you weren't phoning up Celtic and going, Rangers are trying to get me, you know, make a fucking offer here.
No, at the time. At the time as well, a lot of my ex-Killy players had, were playing for Celtic, so I had a wee bit of rivalry in my mind about them, because, like, obviously you play in the same team, but when I was in Killy, Celtic and Rangers never existed. In fact, one of my biggest claims to fame is I scored the first ever goal against Celtic Ladies for Kilmarnock. We played them in a friendly when they just formed, and I scored my first ever goal against them at Hurlford. So, no, at the time it just wasn't a desire. And I also probably, again, had that wee bit of self-doubt. It wasn't a reality for me. And Rangers were looking after me, and it was just nice to be back playing at a decent level. And at that point, my mindset was definitely shifted to appreciate what I was actually getting and what was going for me. And then I never ended very good at Rangers, so I had a wee bit of a blow out with the manager at the time. So it never ended on great terms, but I don't regret that. And also, funny story, that manager of mine, when I went to work for here, he walked out and I was like, oh, hiya. And he came up and apologised to me. It turned out he was an assistant coach with the men's first team at here. I never actually knew that when I was... Like, I played for them for years before I actually worked for them, but I never knew he was involved, and I came straight up and sorry for what happened, and he realised he was out of order and that kind of thing. So it was nice, and I apologise for my part because we obviously exchanged words, but never left Rangers on great terms for that reason.
Ah, that was decent you made up at least.
I know. My heart sank when I seen him because I thought, oh God, what's he doing in here? He's from Glasgow. It was a really good experience. I can't talk, as much as I'm no a Rangers fan, I can't talk negatively about my experience with them other than how it ended.
So were you there at the start, at the formation of Rangers? Because you were saying that Rangers and Celtic, they didn't have obviously women's teams at the time, so they just kind of ingested players for the best teams, I'm guessing.
Aye, pretty much. Like, Kelly really went downhill after that. I would say 90% of players went to Glasgow teams. But that's because they were good enough. When I played with Kelly, they were the best team in the leagues, and we were competing with Hibs, and we were the top team up the top. You know, it's now Glasgow City, Rangers, Celtic, Hearts. We were up there, and prior to me as well being in there, they were in the Champions League. So it was a really, really good set up at Kelly, and the Glasgow teams forming and Glasgow City forming, they were taking all the good players, so Kelly basically fell to nothing. So I forget your question now.
No, I just think it was about you were there at the start.
I wasn't there initially, the very start of Rangers, but I did join early on.
And what about like attendances then, like at that time? Because obviously you're saying that it's Kilmarnock were well established, playing in the Champions League, a good standard, and then obviously the players going up to the Glasgow clubs. Did that help promote the women's game, which I know is obviously sort of one of the sort of goals and objectives of your sort of life?
You've always got your spectators that are parents. You've always got support of your friends and family, always. But I don't remember having a massive support with Rangers. I really kind of think a good support where I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. But back then as well, your criteria wasn't the same. Now there's a big criteria and you need to meet that criteria. I'm saying back then, it wasn't that long ago. It just shows you how much it's grown though, because now you've got to have certain things in place, like the pitch that you play on, and having seating areas for spectators, and having camera stands. You've got to meet these criteria. Back then you never had to meet them, so it was probably just friends, family, and social media wasn't massive on it either, so you couldn't promote it to say, oh, this game's happening. We would all put it out on our own Facebooks and probably Bebo at the time. No, I'm kidding, it's not that far back. But it was us promoting it. So, because I remember playing Arsenal at Murray Park, and I was going to that game, me and Lisa were like, oh, it's going to be brilliant, there's going to be loads of folk here. There's about 10 dads standing in the corner. That was it. We were like, all right, okay, anti-climax. Because that's all your bigwigs coming up for England to play us, and they took me watch.
So. And what about then the transition for Rangers? Like, how did you end up going for there?
So I fell out with John Joyce. I'll just name him, because we're pals now. So I fell out with John, and I didn't know where my head was at, but I did want to play. So very quickly, it was, alas, I used to play with Kelly, who was playing with Troon at the time. Troon were bottom of the league. They were struggling, but it was halfway through a season. So I went to them. Just to be fair, I went for a kickabout, really. It was just down the road for me. And then I was like, God, they're rubbish. Oh, it was terrible. I hated training. But at the same time, I was like, well, I could help them. So then I phoned my pal Shannon Morgan. Don't know if you'll know Shannon. What a player she is as well. So I phoned her and she came along with me. And we ended up winning the league for them that season. So I can't remember the points that we got, but it was mad points in a short space of time. And that was ended up being a cracking memory, like a cracking season, just like, as well, because they're a pub league, really. You were out every game, like the street in. There was a place in Troon called Cheeky Charlie's, and that is, they hosted us every game, so you were just constantly boozing and socialising. So that was a cracking memory. And then after that, where did I go? I think we went to Cowinning. So my pal Craig Hamilton and Michelle Collins, who's actually just signed for us at the women's team, they had a women's team in Cowinning, and me and Shannon went along there. I forget what the reason is. I think Troon disbanded. I'm rubbish with details with things like that, but we just went, again, it was a kickabout. We weren't that bothered. And then I moved to Stranraer, at Stranraer, I got into Celtic. It was a phone call somewhere, but I don't know what the phone call was or how it came about, but I was like, God, I'm going to need to travel to Glasgow for Stranraer. So shortly into that, because it was, again, 4 nights a week, So shortly into that, I've ended up moving back to my mum and dad's house and committed myself fully to going to Celtic, and that was where that came about. So I fell pregnant with Ellie at Celtic, and that's, again, where the story takes a turn. But Celtic was brilliant again. They're just such a different calibre, such a high standard, and they hold you to account, and you've got to train hard, you've got to commit, and they don't let you away with shit, you're not allowed to drink, and it was really good, loved it.
So was that the dream then? Like, what was that phone call like when you thought, I'm going to sign for the team I've supported my whole life?
Well, I remember my dad came up the first night, we were playing a friendly at Lennoxtown, and I was like, Dad, do you want to take me? His registration's L888 Doc, so it's 1888 Doc, and he was like, I need to bring my motor up to Lennoxtown. So he came up and we played a boys team, and I played really well. In fact, a vivid memory of that is the midges up at Lennoxtown. It was horrendous. So I played really well, and the manager was straight away like, I get you in. So that was me. I was starting to train with them. So I trained at Barryfield, and I didn't care about the commitment. Like, I didn't care. It was just so good. But at the time, I was working full time, and my job was really physical. So I was starting at 8, finishing at 5, home, quick dinner, straight on the bypass to go up the Lennoxtown. So it was a lot of commitment. I was constantly knackered, but I was really, really fit. And I really loved that because my job was so physical that it was keeping me in shape for my football. So I just loved competing with Celtic, and I loved pulling on the jersey. And obviously, when you're in the Rangers changing room and you're a Celtic fan, it's not great. But when you're in the Celtic changing room as a Celtic fan, it's brilliant, and your banter's different, and you can now slag the Rangers fans in the team rather than you always taking slagging. So it was really good, loved it. And then we got to play at Parkhead on the 28th of May 2015, which was obviously, that date's ingrained in my mind. It was amazing. We did get a big crowd then. So many friends and family came to watch, and I just loved it. I loved every part of it. I'm lying. I missed an open goal, but that's different. I'll never live that one down, but I loved every part of it, like the experience of it.
Of course, aye. You've lived the dream, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That was, that's one of the massive highlights in my career, was playing at Parkhead. And being an actual player, and it's not a charity match, and it wasn't a fun thing for fans to take part. It was an actual game where we were to compete. It was in a cup. It wasn't the Scottish Cup. It must have been the League Cup. And we won the game, so it was brilliant.
Just on that point, like, do you think that's the way it's going to go, the women's game? Just to go into the future, like, in a few years, after Celtic and Glasgow City, whatever, playing in a big game, a semi or a final, I think we're going to have a sort of stadium full for these types of games.
Well, we're already breaking records. We're constantly breaking records. And I think Hibs has got the biggest fan base for us in this country. But every week you're hearing new sets of fans. And you also, for me, I'm hearing loads of people going to games. So my daughter's in a team, obviously, and in the group chat the other day, they were all heading up to Celtic Rangers women's game. I was like, this is brilliant. This is so good. People who you would never expect to even bother to go and watch, they're away paying their money to go and support their clubs.
Aye, some of the ultras groups are going to the women's games now. That's what I mean. It would be good to see a day where there's an actual national sort of stadium full, is what I'm sort of hoping for.
No, that is it. And that's what I'm saying, the progression of where we were at to where we are. That's what's going to happen. We're going to have people who are dedicated to the teams, and there'll be season tickets. In fact, I think there is season tickets anyway, but there will be stadiums full for these women. Because we had played Celtic at Cumnock in the 7th of January, and they brought down a busload of these folk, and they were all singing these songs at the rehearsal, and I was like, this is magic. They're playing against us, but it was just a great atmosphere. And
they weren't just singing about you missing that open goal, were they?
Nah, they forgot. He's a new set of crowd. No, that was in 2015. I think we've got to learn.
And then I know we've sort of spoken briefly before, and we were having a wee kind of coffee there, but like, what was the transition then for sort of Celtic? Like, how was it like playing for them, and then sort of take us through there?
Aye, so when I fell pregnant with Ellie, it was no long after Suzanne Grant, who played for Celtic, she trained right up to she was 5 months. But for me, I just didn't want to take that risk. I was still working full time in my physical job, and I just thought, I just wasn't feeling it as a pregnant person, and I knew women could still do it, but in my mind I was at an age where I was thinking, right, this could be the end of my career. I'm just going to go and be a mum, and that'll be it. So I had a conversation with them. They were keen to support me, but I had a conversation, and I just said, listen, I'm going to go and have my baby, and I think that'll be it. So along came Ellie. She came early, 2 months premature, so I had no interest in football, none whatsoever. And I would say she was maybe 6 months. No, she couldn't have been 6 months, even less than that. She was only a few months old, and Motherwell got in touch with me. They were basically going for a promotion battle. And I don't know if players had got injured, but they wanted me to come in and help them. And at the time, I was trying to get fit after having a baby anyway. So I was like, oh, this will be brilliant, go and do some training sessions with Motherwell. And I got to the training. The calibre of player in that squad was unbelievable. Like, it was all ex-internationals and players who are kind of very senior. I don't want to say anything negative about their age, but they were just such a good group. Suzanne Grant, who I'd just spoken about, she was there. She's got over 100 caps for Scotland. You had Mandy Burns, her twin sister, Stacey Cook. It was such a good team. So I loved playing for them. I loved it. And then we had 2 games to go and we were playing Rangers. And it was it was in Govan somewhere, I forget the name, Bellahouston Park maybe. And we beat them, and what a feeling it was. It was like amazing. It was just amazing because you weren't expected to beat Rangers and you're still in this battle to get promotion. And then it came down to the last game of the season. It was against Killy, which, again, that's where my allegiances sort of lay through when I was younger. So I had a point to prove, but I also didn't want to upset Killy. And I knew a few folk in the team. So I've played in this final game of the season. It was a league decider. And I'm slide tackling. I'm gaining it my 100% all. And we ultimately won and got promotion for Motherwell. And then about a month later, I found out I was 3 months pregnant. And I didn't know, so I was flinging Chloe about a bit of a park, sliding into tackles, never in lit. So again, that gave me another decision to make with my football career. So that's where it always kind of, there's always something that's happened. It's never been a kind of natural progression, apart from Killy, into Killy, sorry. But at that point, again, I was like, well, that's it. I gave my wee season there to Motherwell, have helped them out, they've got promotion, that's me, I'm going to be a full-time mum now. And it didn't work like that, as we all know. I'm still playing.
Aye, there's a lot of back and forth here. You're the Kenny Miller of the women's game, I think, Claire.
I know, honestly.
Celtic, Rangers, Kilmarnock, Ayr.
I know. I don't know.
Did they slag you for that with the honest women? Can we, for playing for you, or is there much of a sort of bantering about that rivalry?
No, really. I'll be honest, see when I realised the rivalry between Ayr and Killy was real, couldn't believe it. I thought it was just a myth. I thought, but no, there's some real actual hatred between the two.
There's a couple of boys from Salcoats that are obviously kind of involved with Kilmarnock, and they obviously go on a bit here. My nephew's he supports the United, I know.
Oh, so does
that's he? Interesting. Good boy. Scottish boy.
All right, there you go then. Good. Because I'm actually surprised as well. They have got a lot of fans. I know that's terrible, but I support a big club, and you expect people to support that big club. But to hear the amount of fans that Ayr actually have, and they're really loyal, proper fans who want to support them, want to come to games and give them their money, and it's brilliant. And I think there should be more of that. So, you know, that I'm fully involved at Ayr. I really think there should be more of that. And I buy my 2 girls Ayr United strips. I don't tell them who they support, but I buy them Ayr United strips. I don't buy them Celtic strips, because it's going to be up to them at the end of the day when they're older. And it was something as well, it wasn't forced in my throat when I was younger. My dad didn't go and buy me Celtic strips and tell me you have to support that team. He let me make my decisions. So if they want to support Ayr, then I'll support it with them. I'll take them at the games. So
No, absolutely. My son doesn't get a choice, so that's sorry about that. So you left Motherwell, and then you were away being a mum again. And then I think what I've sort of read online, your quotes were basically, I think that's when you went to Ayr. They sort of asked you to come down, and it sounded like you were just sort of kind of going for a bit of a jolly, I suppose. Aye. You were just going to play and have fun again. And then we can just kind of talk to us for there.
Aye, so I got a message for a player at the time, Claire McGinty. So she asked me to come and help out because... Am I allowed to name players? I take it
as an aye. As long as you don't call them anything slanderous.
So she had said, we're going to be playing a couple of friendlies and one of them's against my ex-girlfriend's team. Can you come and help us out? And I was like, I don't know. I wasn't interested at the time, but I just kind of thought, a wee kick about it will not be bad. So I went down to this game and I was a sub, and the manager had never heard me, didn't know he was this Irish guy, didn't know who I was. And to be fair, none of the girls really knew. There was only maybe 2 of them who knew me. But Ayr United formed from Prestwick Girls. So they went Prestwick Girls under-17s to like South Ayrshire girls, and then it was Ayr United that became affiliated with the club. So these were all young girls who'd only ever played in this wee team, and they didn't. There was no standards. This is what I was talking about it earlier, but there was no standards. The attitudes were terrible, and showed up to this game. I forget where it was, but I remember we were playing East Kilbride, and they were all rough, and they all had their makeup on for the night before, and they were like scrambling to get their kits out of bags, none of them matched, and I was like, what have I just walked in? What the fuck is this? And it's all wee lassies, and I was like, is this Ayr United? I would have expected a club like Ayr United to have like a really good setup, but the manager was just a dad who had been brought into, like, it came in a natural progression for Prestwick girls, and it was just, it wasn't a standard where I expected it to be. So he brought me on as a sub, and I scored 4 goals that game. But I also vowed that I wouldn't sign for this club. I was like, right, she's asked me to play these 2 friendlies, I'll play this one. That was too easy. This is standard is shocking. I didn't enjoy that. I'm no playing for them, no signing for them. So then I played the next one, and I got another hat-trick. And the manager was like, right, you need to sign. And like made this big fuss. And he's like, I don't even want you to train. And I know you're committed with your daughters, blah, 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 but you need to play for us. And I was like, nah, no, I just couldn't. In my mind, I was like, I can't do this. No, I can't put myself through that. I had spoke to one of the wee girls walking out, and I was like, were you out last night? And she's like, aye, man, getting out at 3 o'clock. And I'm going, what the? I couldn't do that. I just couldn't. But then I came to, either went to watch or I did agree to another game, one of the two. And I got there and I started to say to them, like, do yous no care that yous have got a game today? Do you no care that you could actually do something? Yous are such a good group of players. Like, they've such good talent. They just weren't showcasing it because they were so rough and so uninterested. And then for there, the manager did say, just come and play, don't train. So I was like, all right, and that's no bad deal. Eventually, I've played maybe 5 games or something like that, and I thought, no, I really want to go to training. So then the manager started letting me get involved in training to say, like, no, we need to be doing this. This is the kind of things we need to be doing. So I ended up having a bigger say at the team. I was qualified to do that, by the way. I wasn't just, like, stepping toes. I was qualified to be saying things to him. And he appreciated my help. And he would actually go away and go and talk to other coaches and just let me go on with things. I'm saying that as if I'm taking a tour. It was never like that. There was a lot of respect there for both sides and players. And the players appreciated it because, again, this was just a wee dad that was slung in at the deep end, and now he's coaching the first team at Ayr United Women's. So for me signing to where we are at now, if you look at pictures, it's completely different. Like, the standard and calibre of player is completely different. But it was a good setup. It was really good. They just needed to kind of focus and take it a bit more seriously, which is exactly what they did. Because there's maybe 4 or 5 players for that in initial squad who are still playing, but even they're different players, just the way they are, the way they act, the way they prepare themselves, the way they just are as players. But they've aged as well, obviously. There's a big part of that where they've matured as people. So aye, the difference now. So I'm now playing for a Championship ladies team who are competing to get into the Premiership SPL2, and I couldn't be prouder, because this is the same team that was away down there once and didn't care. So the progression for us as players, the team as a whole, and the club is unbelievable. And I've been there 6, almost 7 years now.
No, from what I've seen, it seems like you're obviously a pivotal part of that. So when you play your role down there, are you being involved? You've spoke a lot about, like, other like ex-colleagues of yours saying that Claire come play here. Have you been involved with the sort of scouting of players for her, or saying she's good or she's available, that sort of stuff?
Well, my wee pal Shannon Morgan that I was talking about earlier, who I got to come to Troon then Coenan, she was in the army, so she had been dipping in and out, so when she was up the road she'd play for us, got her signed obviously, and then she'd go way back to the army, and then eventually she's come out of the army and came to us full time. I got in Kim Dick, who was an ex-player at Killy. I will kind of attracted players, but then you bring in a few players and all of a sudden your squad looks better and people start to say, oh, they're getting results, so we're going to sign for them. And it just looks better on paper. And at the time, the social media was actually really good. There was a lot of showcasing of the team and people appreciate that. And we had beat Killy in the league to win the league. It came down to the last game of the season and obviously it was massive. I was injured that game, which was devastating, but it was massive. And aye, for there we've literally just grew and grew and attracting players that you would never have attracted way back when. So we're in a place now that I can honestly say every single player is a very good standard player. Whereas back then you'd kind of be like, oh God, need to ship her off somewhere. It's not like that now.
Aye, and what about the camaraderie? Anytime you sort of speak to people about fit, but that seems like a big attraction in it, right? The sort of banter in the dressing room. Aye. You've obviously been here for 6 years now, you're saying, so would you say, say comparison's a FIFA joy, but is this the sort of best dressing room you've been involved with?
100%, hands down. See, and I'm probably, I don't know how to use a nice word for this, right, but I'm over the top when I go to explain to people, this is genuinely the nicest team I've ever been at. It's the nicest academy, it's the nicest group that I've ever been at. There's always been bitching and cliquiness, and probably bullying's a strong word to use, but close to bullying in teams where they're intentionally making people feel bad about themselves. But at Ayr, there's none of that. Everybody's pals, everybody gets on. We're all wanting the best for each other. It's just a really nice, good atmosphere. And like, we nurture players, and it's not just the first team, it runs right through the whole academy. And obviously now I've got a say in it, because I'm the head of the academy, I've got a say in it. So if I ever hear anything at the younger teams, I'm first to step in and say, no, we don't act like that at this academy. We don't treat people like that at this academy. And if you do, there'll be consequences. So I hands down can say this is the best team I've ever played at, for camaraderie and friendship and women power.
And what about, you're saying, obviously, you're one of the senior players. Does that, and obviously your role as the head of the academy there, does that impact how you get involved with the sort of the practical joke side of things and the banter side of things? And if you get any sort of stories, I suppose, for the your time here in terms of some of the funny stuff that might have happened?
I don't think it impacts it. No. I'm my character. I can't hide it. I'm always up for a joke and a laugh. I've been here 6 years, so there's going to be loads of things that's happened. But when you mentioned that, the first thing that popped into my mind last year at the awards night, we're finally getting joint awards nights with the men's team. We had it in the final in here, and one of our right backs decided to jump in a bath full of balls in front of the whole place. Now we're trying to rock up. We're dead professional. we're brilliant now. Used are sharing this with us, and we're dead professional. And she's got this wee short dress and goes diving into a ball pit that's in a bath in front of everybody. I was like, oh, cheers. I'm no name, and she'll know exactly who she is. Everybody will know who she is. But aye, the team are brilliant that way. There's always banter and there's always jokes. And like, we have nights out and stuff, but you can't disclose what happens in nights out, obviously.
Fair enough. No, that sounds like good banter, to be fair, rather than anything too bad. What about, you mentioned the sort of parity with the men's game then. How's that been going? How are we tracking there? And what would you like maybe to change and see going to be a bit better there for mere sort of parity in the future?
So, like I'd said to you earlier, before this, obviously, we had a wee chat earlier, and I'd said that when I got my job as the head of the academy, it's coming on almost 3 years, and one of the first things I did was I met with the chairman, who had been appointed in January, and when I spoke about it, I just think nobody's ever had that conversation. I don't think it's ever been a case that the club aren't willing to support, because the club and the setup was really good, and the fact that people had in the background for years tried to set it up. Sean Ferry was mainly the first person to set it up, and I think it was over 15 years like this had been running, the women's academy. They grew it from the ground up, so there was work getting done in the background. I just don't think MD'd ever had the conversations to say, right, this is what we need and this is what we'd expect to be inclusive, like for yous to be inclusive and for us to be included. And once I had that conversation with the chairman, it was an instant, yes, we'll do this for you. So stuff is like simple as your joint awards night, your joint photo shoots, your joint sponsorship for your strips. So we now share the same strips as the men. No, physically share them, but you know what I mean? We get the same sponsorship. We get a new strip every season under their sponsor. And that's just the kind of thing that it doesn't cost the club money, but it's a small gesture to show we're inclusive and we are here to support you. And honestly, they've been great. There's probably ways to go. There is ways to go, but they've been brilliant. I can't fault them for it.
And is that something you, I don't know if campaigning is the right word, but all the other sort of women's teams in Scotland, is that in place already, or is that what you think we should sort of go to?
I don't know. I'm very non-confrontational, right? So see this, see like when you see the Scotland team and they're all standing up for we want this and we want that. I would choose not to go down that road. For me personally, I wouldn't like to go down that road. I just think things happen naturally. And look at, as I keep saying, where we are then to where we are now is huge. And it's been a very short space of time. So if that's where we're at, if we continue to let this natural progression happen, that we're going to be equal at some point in the next few years, the near future. So if we keep forcing it, I think it's going to cause resistance and it's going to have, like, your Joey Bartons are going to like stand up and start bitching and moaning, and that's not what I want. I want people to respect the women's game and they'll be like, oh, they're like all moaning. So as much as we have got ways to go and there's loads of things that I would personally like, I never want to push the boundaries. I just want it to happen naturally, and so far it has for us.
I know what you're saying there, and I'm no being confrontational here, but what I was, the situation you just described with the chairman, it's just about somebody having that conversation. How do we enable those conversations, I suppose, is what I'm trying to ask for the other teams, you know?
I think it depends who the person is. So we're really lucky. Your chairman's brilliant. He's down to earth. He's open to these things. He's certainly no sexist, whereas... I'm not saying previous chairmen were, but I know previous managers of the first team were. They didn't appreciate the women's game, they didn't care for us, but he's came in, and then shortly after him, Lee Bullen came in, and Lee couldn't have been more supportive of the ladies' squad. Like, he really, really couldn't have came to our games. He was talking about us in his, I nearly said podcast.
Press conferences.
So he was just dead, dead supportive. He came to the awards nights for us, like the kids' awards nights. He was just really, really good. And that's the kind of thing that we need. We need people like him to take an interest, to speak about us positively for other people to take an interest. But it's probably no shying away for the conversations that when you're looking for something and need something, just say it. You'll get an iron or no. So, and the chairman literally... I went to, well, a list. He'll say it was a list of demands. I'd say it was a nice list of things, but he only said no to one thing on that whole list, and it was to show...
£500,000 a week.
Aye, I don't know why. I even put it down at 400. No, I'd asked if we can play on the pitch, the men's pitch, 2-3 times a year, and the answer was no. And it came down to the service agreement, service level agreement, which was also in place for the boys and their team, so... As much as there's probably a bit of sexism there, the rule's in place for everybody else, so why should we overtake that rule? So I think it's just one of the ones, they've invested so much money into it for their men's team, who are the breadwinners and the moneymakers, so why should the women's team take precedence, which we wouldn't. We would probably try and tie it in on a Sunday where the men's team don't have a game the next week, but then they need to pay stewards, they need to go to their pocket to pay, then it's the groundsman's on another day, and there is logistics behind it, so they understand it. As much as it's shit, it's not a 4G park, so we can't just get the use of it whenever we want, so there is an understanding. Like, I'm not going to throw my toys at the pram because he said no to one thing on my list. The one thing, it was very valid reasons. As shit as it is for us women, there's good reasons for it.
No, that's interesting you mention that, because people probably aren't thinking about the sort of logistics at all. So fair does. What about, you mentioned Amelia, so I have to ask you about him. Joey Barton, I think his comments are kind of well known. I'm not going to resurface them, but if you bumped into him in a night out, what would you say to him? And how does it make you feel, I suppose, is one of the, you're probably one of the better known sort of professionals and sort of the Ayrshire's women game, so when you see somebody with the profile that he's got making the comments he's got.
I just think, I've got loads of different views on him, right, but I just think, shut up. Like, if you've got nothing nice to say, don't say a thing. Why do you need to be the person who's commenting it? Why have you nominated yourself to be that guy that's going to stand up against women? Like, shut up. Back in your box. And I feel like he's doing it for clout and likes, and the more he goes on, the angrier he gets. So he's getting this new reputation for himself. He's never had a good reputation, but I don't care about what he says. I more care that his face is even popping up on my screen, because shut up, you dick. Some of the things, annoyingly, some of the things I agree with him. Like, there is things that he said, and I think, well, I actually agree with that, but because it's coming for you, I'm no...
He's sort of ostracising himself, isn't he? Because
massively.
I don't know if he even, like, you're touching on there. Sorry to interrupt as well, but
that's right.
Don't forget, like, I don't know if he even believes some of the stuff he's saying. I think it's just like say your gym trainers and all that, and the phone-ins, they just say controversial stuff to keep themselves relevant.
Exactly, that's what it feels like. A lot of the time he says things and I think, well, did you even watch that? Because he's inaccurate with some of his information. Does he even watch it, or is he just saying it for a reaction? He's trying to target a certain group, and it's a certain male chauvinist group. So I don't know, if that's the type of person you want to be. And you said, what would I say to him on a night out? Nothing, I'd fucking ignore him. I wouldn't get near him. Weirdo, honestly.
Aye, there's a market for that, unfortunately. I'm not about to get into the whole piss with all the guys, but I think unfortunately there is, and some people are going for that. So you mentioned Lee Bullen there, obviously, and Bruni's there now, and Whittaker and stuff. So what's that been like when they've sort of come into the club?
Obviously, I'm a massive Celtic fan, so when he get appointed, I nearly fell off my chair. But believe it or not, he's brand new. Like, he's so down to earth. So I met him a couple of weeks after his appointment, or a week after, and he's coming into the room to meet all the staff, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Scott Brown. And he just had like a general chit-chat banter conversation with me, and it probably knocked me down a peg or two, because I was like, God, I was expecting to like be intimidated by him and not know what to say, but not, he's that down to earth, and he was asking all the right questions. He was asking about the women's side, and he took an interest, and like, I never asked too much about him personally, or we spoke about his children and things like that, but he's just a dead nice guy. But surprisingly, Stephen Whittaker was the one that was more interested. He wanted to know about leagues and about structures and about opponents, and he's really took an interest. So I see them in passing a lot, and Brunei and me are now best pals, like,
obviously
besties, so he doesn't know that, but so I see them in passing, and it's just dead normal now. It's just like, it's just another person, as much as it's still, oh my God, I still can't believe I'm seeing him all the time. But they went by our training a few weeks ago, and we were training a Sunday, but Celtic were playing at 12:30, and Brunei's shouting like, oh, I would stop, but I've got a lunch appointment at 12:30, like, because he's got to watch the Celtic game. So he's like having banter with the team and stuff, so I'm hoping that at some point he will take a real interest. But he's still got a job today with the men's team, and he's still got to learn the ropes and figure out what he's doing before he learns what he's doing with us. But he also doesn't live in here, which is harder. Lee lived in here, so he'd like easier access to get to our games and things like that. I did invite Scott to our semi-final a few weeks ago, but I had prior arrangements with Celtic.
Is that brought more media attention to you? Because obviously they're kind of high profile and more recent sort of play. I know Lee was a player at the top level, but more sort of recent players and managers, and Bruni's a big name in Scotland, I think it's fair to say.
Well, to be fair, see, when the news broke, the media attention was unbelievable. It was just everywhere. Every social media app I went on, every time I clicked on my Google, he was the first bit of news, which I'm not complaining about, but it was a bit of a frenzy. It's calmed a lot compared to then. But to be fair, again, Lee was getting that support for Aaron. We've got a journalist that comes in for that, and he was getting all that attention. Obviously, when Scott came in, it was like, holy shit, Scott Brown's went to air, so it was massive, but it's all calmed down. I think they get the same level of support, but it's more an interest that Scott is who he is, and he's a recent who he is kind of guy, captain of Celtic, and he's now at Air United managing, so it's brilliant for us, it really is. Like I said, we're besties, so brilliant for me.
Oh, cool. We've nearly done an hour, so we'll probably wrap up soon. But just a couple of other things, obviously you touched on being a mum, and you went, had a wee viral sensation with one of your daughters. God. So you've been, has she been doing any more graffiti or painting about the house?
No. Chloe gets a bad reputation. She's got a really bad reputation because she gets up to stuff. But what I will say is she is the loveliest wee girl. She is lovely. It's just me painting on a bad light painting on the bad legs. I'm always putting the mischievous videos out, but that video of her made me money.
One of the boys in the group chat wanted me to ask you about that. Like, how does that work then? Like, if press companies contact you, then they obviously say, oh, we'll give you sort of money because it's made the X amount of views or whatever.
That's what happened. So see that day that she painted my house, I was in so much shock. I didn't know what I was doing. I know I put it on social media, but I don't know if it was a cry for help or whatever, because then I put my phone down, and that was me and my pal scrubbed my house for 6 hours. And then when I went back to my phone later, I had DMs for like radio stations and Kale Salad, Lad Bible, all they can hang. Like, everybody was contacting me, the Daily Record, like, everybody. And I was like, to my pal and Mick, Chloe's dad, I was like, what did I do? Am I supposed to reply? Is that what people do? I've never been in this position. So I replied to the Daily Record because they were most obvious to me. And they were like, we'll give you £150 to share your video and tell the story. And I was like, sound, they bought. And then the radio phoned me, it was Clyde. So I was on the radio that night. And then Kale Salad and Lad Bible had contacted me. I wish, with all my heart, I went with Lad Bible. I went with bloody Kale Salad. So they said,
I've never heard of Kale Salad.
I know, they're still out there, but they're just nowhere near as big as Lad Bible. But it's because of the percentages, right? So by that evening, I was a pure professional at this, and I was like, right, who wants to buy one? And I was looking at, so they were both DMing me through Instagram, and I was like back and forth with them, and Kale Salad were offering a better percentage of rate than Lad Bible. But obviously, in hindsight, Lad Bible gets much bigger views and shares, so I'd have made more. So I signed up to Kale Salad, and I ended up in this company, I forget what they were called. And the video made money constantly for the next few months, and I was just getting random £300 payments, or a wee £150 there, or a £200 there. So bad. For months, and then it all went quiet. Every penny that went to Chloe, by the way. Every single penny went to her. So
probably partly the cleaning bill as well.
No, well, I know, me and Courtney, I think I washed it with my tears, I'm not going to lie. It was terrible. And folk were like, you'd have seen all the slagging I got, like how bad a mum I was sleeping on. But folk were saying I'd done it for likes. My flooring was brand new. Like, it was brand new. My American fridge freezer was a 2 week old freezer. My couch was 2 months old. I'd literally just redone all my whole house, and she'd done that. So
I know, I was going to say it to you, like, because I thought you might, like, don't feel bad about it, because my mum told us years ago, like, me and Megan were in, it was in our house in Pennycook, and they must have been painting the hut, and we were going to christen or something, and it ended up covered in paint. And we're fine, we're still here, so I don't beat yourself up.
No, I don't, because it was the week before coronavirus, the lockdown, and Chloe was downstairs. I'd already gave her her breakfast, hence why she was naked. I gave her Cocoa Pops, because people ask me that question a lot, why was she naked? Because I was feeding her Cocoa Pops. And Ellie was upstairs in the well, so I'm upstairs lying with Ellie, and I can hear Chloe the whole time, and I can hear her playing and being fine. And because folk were like, oh, a quiet one's like dangerous, and I was like, she wasn't quiet, I could hear her. Wee!
Well, she was enjoying herself.
She was loving life. So when I went down, and I first went to record, I actually thought it was talcum powder, then I thought it was Suda cream, and then the reality hit me. I was like, I had a fucking brand new tin of white paint in that kitchen, holy shit. So I think she's just like dipped herself in it and just rolled about, and aye, she's went to town.
I like it, was funny, it is what it is.
I know, I guess
we'll probably wrap up soon. So just to get back, I think it was important to get you in to sort of talk about your role there at the academy. So can you just explain like what that is, because it might be sort of non-fitba people like listening, so they might not know what
to be the head of the academy.
Aye, and like what the academy is and like why it's important and all that sort of stuff.
So our academy, we've got under 8s, 10s, 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s, a development and a ladies team. So I oversee all that, make decisions on what I think is best for them. For example, getting the under 14s into the national performance pathway. That was the dream, it was supposed to happen last month and it fell through because that league never had enough teams in it. But we're now sitting in top YPL, which is a really good standard for our 14s, but it's just try to drive that. My role is to try and drive it and get us to a certain standard. Years ago, it wasn't a thing. We were just plodding along playing football. It was all about participation. But a big part of what I'm trying to achieve is to be inclusive, because there is other academies like Killy. I'll just name them out there. Just Killy.
Your rival is an ex-employer.
Aye, so they would happily sit a wee 12-year-old down and say, no, you're not good enough, you need to go. Whereas we're not going to do that. So we are our YPL 1 team. We've also got a Tier 3 team who's for the players that aren't quite ready, but we're not getting rid of you. You can still play with our academy. We'll still nurture you to try and get you to a point where you're at that level. So that's what my role is. I'm just trying to drive standards, raise participation and keep people playing and just overseeing everything. And obviously we've got the board that we've got the Women's Academy board that oversee everything with me, and I can go through them if there's bigger decisions to be made. So it's really, really good setup.
That sounds amazing, actually, to be fair. Fair play to you for doing that. What's the dream with that then? Like, are you wanting to basically position Ayr United's Women's Academy to be the best in Ayrshire, or best in Scotland? Like, where do you want to go with it?
100% best in Ayrshire. That's the starting point. We, as daft as this sounds, our wee under-10s are hammering Killy now. Which to folk will be like, so they're under-10s, but no, that's massive. That is massive for us because we've never been able to compete like that. And then our under-14s are semi on par, they're not quite there yet, but we're all building towards that. And obviously, their women's team in the Premier League, Prem 2, which we are sitting playoff positions for, so we could potentially be in the same league as them next season. And then as soon as your ladies' team goes to a progression, then the rest naturally follows anyway. So ultimately, we want to be up in the top tier of women's football and have the academy to filter through with us, so it will be national performance pathway.
So that means, like, in terms of when they move for the 16s to the 18s, the development squad in into your team, and then you're wanting them to basically be involved with the Scotland at youth level as well. Aye. Is that what you're meaning?
Aye, because currently you can get involved with Scotland through Ayr United, like it has happened, and also if players have went to Celtic, which you would welcome that. You absolutely welcome that. What you don't want is a sidestep to another Ayrshire team.
You know, wanting Kilmarnock robbing your players, basically.
I just personally don't see it as a progression. I just don't see it. So if you want to go to Glasgow, aye, by all means, we'll help you and we'll sign the paperwork with you and get you on your merry way, because that's a standard that's way, way above us as it stands. But don't sidestep into Killy, because that's where we're aiming to be and be part of that journey with us. So
I'm guessing with parents, you're wanting your kid to be safe, and then it's probably just the convenience of, if that's a 10-minute drive versus a 20-minute drive, all that sort of stuff probably comes into it.
A lot of that does. I know it depends on the parent, because obviously, like the girl that signed with Celtic, her parents were really supportive of her move, and as a bigger commitment, she's driving to Glasgow and it's extra training nights, but that's where she wants to be, and she'll get scouted for Scotland a lot easier. But the conversation with one of our under-14s players recently, who was in a bit of a situation, she doesn't know where to be, where to go, will she get picked up? And I've had to reassure her that we are constantly getting approaches for big clubs. There's a wee girl in particular that plays with our ladies team, but she's in under-18s, so she still plays under-18s, but she comes up to us. Phenomenal. And we are constantly getting approaches for her, Glasgow City, Hamilton, the other teams, and she keeps knocking them back. And this wee under-14s player's like, that's who I was worried about. I was thinking, well, she's so good and she's stuck here. And I said, no, she's not stuck. She's choosing to be here. Like, that's her choice. So it's not that we don't have options available to our players. It's just that our players are choosing to be loyal to us, which we appreciate. And it is, like I said earlier, what a nice place it is to be. It's such a nice, inclusive place.
You're selling it. I want to sign
clear.
If you can get me in. cool. Is there anything else you want to talk about or anything you want to ask?
Right,
we'll call it here then, Claire. I really appreciate you coming in today, and I wish you all the best in air, and hopefully you get promoted this year and take it for there.
Thank you very much.
Right, cheers, pal.